Welcome back. This half hour brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf and online at sunburymotors.com. Let's talk about the hottest team in baseball through the opening 2 months. That's the Philadelphia Phillies. Todd Zielecki. Todd, why have the Phillies been consistently good all season?
Well, I think the biggest thing, and it's the most important thing, is the starting pitching. The starting pitching has been absolutely amazing over this seven-game winning streak. I think the Phillies starters have a 0.51 ERA in this winning streak, and overall this season, the rotation has like a 2.2 something. So it was second best rotation in baseball for the season, an ERA under one in this winning streak, and you know Ranger Suarez is just absolutely been amazing. He's really elevated his game. 25 consecutive scoreless innings. Zach Wheeler is being Zach Wheeler. Christopher Sanchez is picking up where he left off last season. And Aaron Nola, he had that bad first start of the season. He has picked it up since then as well. And the best $2 million bargain, you know, in recent memory, Spencer Turnbull, has also been fantastic pitching in place to Taiwan Walker. So you add all that together. You have a fresh bullpen when they come in because they're not pitching that much, and the offense is picked up. But really, the starting pitching, you know, I can't talk enough about the starting pitching. It has been just fantastic.
And the other, what you bring up, Todd, about the bullpen part, you've got starters going deeper into games because of their pitch efficiency. What long-term effect can that have when we're talking about July and August where maybe the bullpen's needed more and more?
Huge. It's, you know, it everything kind of adds up over the course of the season. So if, you know, the starters were struggling the first month of April, man, these relievers, you know, even the first week, they were pitching a lot. And Rob Thompson was getting killed because, you know, he wouldn't pitch guys 3 days in a row, or this guy wasn't available because he had pitched three out of the previous four games. And now these guys are rested more. And that cumulative effect, if it continues like this, the impact is potentially huge. You know, you have fresher arms later in the season, and then most importantly, of course, you have fresher arms in the postseason, which is really what they're shooting for.
All right, because that brings up something that I've always thought that was important, that a manager not only needs to manage the situation, they also need to manage the game. And they also need to manage the season. And it's that last part that I don't think enough people talk about with a manager. What's your thought on that?
Oh, I agree 100%. And that's why a manager, you know, I guess gets paid what he gets paid, and why a manager gets criticized so much. Because I think not enough people keep that in the back of their mind. So Rob Thompson has a rule. First, I don't know, two, three, 4 months of the season, really probably the first two, 3 months of the season, he will not pitch a reliever 3 days in a row. It doesn't matter if Jose Alvarado threw one pitch on Monday and 10 pitches on Tuesday, he will not pitch him on Wednesday. And he will not do that because he knows how much that can grind down the pitcher. Even if he just threw one pitch, getting up, warming up, coming into the game 3 days in a row early in the season can be very taxing. And so he will do that. The manager, you know, Rob Thompson specifically, has gotten a lot of criticism the first week of the season, you know, because he plays Whit Merrifield in left field over Brandon Marsh. Well, how can you possibly not play Brandon Marsh every day? He needs to figure out if he's an everyday player. How can you not play Bryson Stott every single game? Yep. And he should be an everyday player. True. But you also need to play Whit Merrifield every once in a while, Edmundo Sosa every once in a while. You need to play Garrett Stubbs every once in a while, Christian Pache every once in a while. So if an injury happens, or if there's a pinch hitting situation late in the game, those guys actually have a chance of getting a base hit. So the manager takes a lot of heat for that, but I have absolutely no problem with the way that Rob Thompson has handled his bullpen or his bench, with the idea, again, like you said, Steve, that, you know, this stuff will pay off potentially in August, September, and October.
And Todd, I was talking to somebody about another team, another player, and I said, usually the second year of a long-term contract, you see the player take off because they're more relaxed, because they feel like in the first year they've got to prove that they're going to earn the money. Trey Turner's hitting 340 right now. Now, how relaxed is he in terms of overall demeanor, play, at the plate, everything?
I think he's, probably mentally in a much different space, I mean, without a doubt, than he was at this point last year. You know, he signed a $300 million contract, and, you know, he did take less money to come to Philly, so, you know, he definitely wanted to come to Philly. It's not like he took the most money. And it's like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I can handle Philly. Like, he knew what he was getting into. But still, that said, you want to do well. You know, you want to make a good first impression. You know, Nick Castellanos, his first season in 2022 wasn't very good. And last year, he made the All-Star team. He didn't finish great, but he made the All-Star team. So I think there is a lot to do with that. Whit Merrifield sent a one-year, $8 million deal. He's talked about that a lot recently. He homered on Sunday, his first extra base hit of the season. But, you know, he gave a great quote to Matt Gelb from The Athletic, basically saying, you know, it's kind of like in high school, you're trying to impress the girl. And, you know, while you're trying to impress the girl, you stumble all over yourself.
Right.
And I think that's Whit Merrifield, another great example of that. Guy trying to make a good first impression, starts out slowly. Oh, my gosh, I got a hit. Well, you can't go in the batter's box obsessing about that. You have to let your natural ability take over, and sometimes guys get away from that. So it's good to see Trey doing that. I mean, if Trey can keep this up, even if he hits just anything over 300, I mean, what a huge boost to the lineup it'll be over 162-game season.
How's the team been defensively to this point? Because everybody will always talk about hitting. They'll talk about pitching. But if you play solid defense, I mean, I was at the Pirates game the other day where I watched the team with the better lineup. That was the Pirates. They had the better lineup. I have no idea who was in the Red Sox lineup. I know it was on the IL. I know all the guys on the IL. They're actually, like, names. But they made so many defensive mistakes in the game, they lost the game 6-1. So how have the Phillies been defensively?
The Phillies actually, and that's kind of not a lot of people, you're right, focus on defense, but it's so important. And this Phillies defense is probably the best I can remember in recent years. You know, for so many years, it was so bad. I mean, so bad, this defense, infield, outfield. But this season, you know, everybody looks at the new defensive metrics differently. Some people put a lot of stock in them. Some people put zero stock in them. I'm kind of in the middle. I think it kind of gives you a rough estimate of how well a team is playing. If you look at some of those modern metrics, like outs above average, defensive runs saved, the Phillies have one of the better infield defenses right now. Bryce Harper has been tremendous at first base. Bryson Stott's a potential Gold Glove winner. Trey Turner has improved. He had a bad year last year by his standards, and he said it himself, he had a bad year. And I think Alec Bohm has really come a long way defensively at third base. You know, think back to where he was a few years ago. I mean, people were crushing him and making jokes about how bad he was defensively. Boy, this guy's the worst defensive third baseman I've ever seen. And now I would say he's at least average, and that's tremendous. And then center field, you have Johan Rojas, I think is the best Phillies defensive outfielder in a generation, at least. I talked with Larry Boa about Johan Rojas in spring training. I said, is he as good as Gary Maddox, who won 8 Gold Gloves? He said, yeah, he's right up there with Gary Maddox. I said, is he better than Maddox? He says, I'm not ready to go there yet. But that's high praise from Larry Boa.
And I agree with that. It's interesting about Bohm because you know, besides doing Penn State football, basketball, I also broadcast the State College Spikes. Well, Bohm started out as the third overall pick at Williamsport, so I did a lot of Alex games his first season in pro ball, and that's what I told everybody. Defensively, I said he's stiff, he doesn't bend down, I said he's going to be a problem unless he straightens it out. And now I look at him today, and I mean, Todd, I feel like he's a fluid player out there, and I think that's a 180 from what I originally saw.
Totally. You know, you don't, when a ball is hit to third base now, like his first couple of years, you're like, he's probably, maybe he'll catch this.
Yeah. Right.
Maybe he'll make a good throw. Where now you kind of expect him to make the play. He's not going to make every play. He had an error last night. It was actually ruled a hit, but it was an error. It's a play he typically will make. So he's going to have his little bumps here and there. But yeah, I mean, from where he was, and you're right, I remember when he got drafted, scouts are saying, this guy is not going to stick at third base. There's no way
right.
he is going to stick at third base. He's just not good enough. He's just not good enough. And now he's here, and he is good enough.
On paternity leave is Bryce Harper. How long might he be out?
He's supposed to be back for the series finale here in Cincinnati on Thursday.
Okay.
So he's so the next two games he'll miss. Now it's funny because we just talked about Bohm playing third base. I'm guessing that Bohm will move over to first base
right.
Tonight and tomorrow night, and then you'll have probably Edmundo Sosa or Whit Merrifield play third base. But yeah, Bryce will be back on Thursday.
Right. Even if he has a tough day at the plate, he's worth the price of admission because he plays so hard. You know, where is he right now? And we're talking at this point, he would be 16 months removed from the surgery. So where is he right now?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, he's 100% healthy. And, he's moving around real well. The elbow is a non-factor. I think where he is, you know, he would tell you that he's not happy with his swing right now, or he's not quite there yet. But he's, you know, I think he's hitting some tough luck a little bit. But he's, boy, defensively, Bobby Dickerson's the Phillies infield coach. And I remember last May, the Phillies were in San Francisco, and Bobby was really hitting them some fungos, pretty good ones, from all around the diamond to kind of mimic one hoppers, two hoppers to first base. And Bryce was making every play, and I asked Bobby after that workout, pregame workout in San Francisco, I said, so what do you think? And he's like, I'm not saying now, but I am telling you, this guy can win the Gold Glove.
Wow.
I absolutely believe he can win the Gold Glove. He's like, I'm not saying it's going to happen this year. He might never win it. I'm just saying I think he has the ability to win the Gold Glove. And I agree. I think he's going to be in the conversation for a Gold Glove this year if he keeps playing the way he is.
It's interesting about Rojas because he is, you mentioned about the comparison to Gary Maddux, which is, I think, apropos. Offensively, same thing. I saw him at Williamsport. You could see defensively he glides the ball. He takes great routes. Right? But offensively, like managers find religion when he goes to the plate.
Right.
Right, so where is he offensively right now, and how does Rob manage around it if at all?
Well, so you know, Johan had that. He hit very well in the regular season last year, like a month and a half. I think he hit over 300, but then he was terrible in the postseason. Just swung at everything, missed everything. He was god awful in the postseason. He'd tell you that. Spring training didn't hit much better. I makes the team because they said they saw enough improvements out of him. Well, the first 10 games of the season, 11, 12 games of the season, he was not doing very well. And in the conversation, it started to turn to, you know, how long is the leash going to be on Johan Rojas? But then, lo and behold, since then, he's actually been hitting the ball really well. So the last 9 or 10 games, he's hitting over 300. He hit a 98-mile-an-hour fastball, letter-high fastball, last night off of Hunter Green to right center field for a triple. And, I don't know if he does that the first week of the season. So what I kind of tell people about Johan Rojas is the other 8 guys in the lineup theoretically could all be all-stars if they have, like, really good years.
Yeah.
Certainly Turner, Harper, Schwarber, Real Muto, right? You know, and, you know, Scott has a breakout year, Bohm has a breakout year. They don't need Johan Rojas to hit 300 or even 250.
Right.
I said this the other day, and somebody killed me. Like, you're accepting mediocrity from the Phillies dinohood. I'm like, no, I'm not. What I'm saying is, if Johan Rojas, for example, hits 225 with a 650 OPS, that's not very good. But I bet you if you look at the average 9-hole hitter in Major League Baseball, it's probably pretty close to average.
Mm-hmm.
If he's the average 9-hole hitter, whatever those numbers are, with his defense, he's worth playing every day. His defense is that good. And I bet you if you asked Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola, Ranger Suarez, Christopher Sanchez, who do you want playing center field every day? Even if he's hitting 225, they would say, I want Johan Rojas. because he's going to save us a lot of runs.
If you just look at the batting average and make that mistake, you are not a total baseball watcher. The number of runs he saves, the number of bases he cuts off, right, that saves a pitcher and saves an inning, it has value. Now, if he's hitting under 200, now the value diminishes, but he's doing enough. I do have to ask you about the arm issue in baseball right now. They blame the pitch clock and so forth. I'm like, Todd, how much of this has to do with the fact that a lot of these guys go out and they're told to throw as hard as they can for as long as they're out there? Does that have something to do with this?
I think that has most of everything to do with it. Now, does everything play a role? I've heard some pitchers say, well, now they can't use as much sticky. They can't use sticky stuff to grip the ball, so now they have to grip the ball tighter.
Yeah.
That's tightening my tendons when I release the ball, my ligaments when I release the ball. I'm sure there's something to that. I'm sure there's maybe something to the fact that you don't have as much time to recover after throwing a max effort pitch. But I think if you look at the increase in UCL injuries over the last 20 years with the increase of velocity and the increase of breaking ball usage, I think that correlates as much as anything, personally. I mean, I'm not a doctor. I don't know but I look at those things. I say guys are throwing harder than ever. And the body is, your arm is not built to throw 100 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not. So you keep throwing 100 miles an hour, and that's why I think, I don't know what's going to happen with Paul Skenes in Pittsburgh, but, I've looked for his first three minor league starts. He's only been around 60 pitches, three innings, It's like, is he going to be able to throw six innings for 100 pitches in the big leagues? It's going to be interesting to see how he handles that.
Well, the Pirates were here for several years before the Cardinals came back, and they are notorious in that organization for pitch counts for their minor league pitchers. I mean, notorious for it. And I'm not so sure it works. I mean, to be honest with you, Maddux and Glavin seem to not miss any starts. So I don't know.
Right. And that's what's kind of interesting about the Phillies rotation, to be honest with you, because I was just looking up this today. The five Phillies starters right now combined, all five combined, four-seam fastball, two-seam fastball, they rank 24th in baseball in average velocity.
Yep.
So this is not a rotation that throws hard. This is a rotation that generally knows how to pitch.
Yes.
Move in and out, up and down, change speeds.
Yep.
And they're not, nobody on this staff is throwing 98 mile an hour fastballs. They're, Ranger Suarez is 91, 92. Aaron Nola is 91, 92. Tylan Walker, and he comes back, he's going to be 88, 89, 91. Spencer Turnbull's 91, 92. But they can all locate and they can all mix speeds and change speeds and locate. And yeah. Not a bad way to win.
Yeah, it's not a bad way to win. And also, let your defense do a little bit of work, and if they do their job, you're fine. All right.
Exactly right.
Todd, an absolute pleasure. As always, everybody can tune in to the Philly show with Jim Salisbury, Ruben Amaro Jr., and Todd as well. Thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime, Steve. Thanks. Take care.
Todd Zielecki and the Phillies. Next half hour, we'll talk about the Indy 500 this weekend on News Radio 1070 WKOK.